Let's take our Bibles and turn to 2 Timothy chapter 2. 2 Timothy chapter 2. A number of people in our church family are away hunting this weekend. Still a great attendance. Thank you for being here. And we miss those that are out there hunting. We hope they're having fun out in the woods looking for deer. One thing I learned when I moved to Wisconsin coming up on 18 years ago, I was just 60 miles away in the western suburbs. It's a completely different world down there. When I got to Wisconsin, I did not realize how big a deal hunting season and the first day of deer hunting season was. In fact, it really hit me as I was driving up the street in my lovely neighborhood, and I saw a guy with a full deer on the front of his car. And I'm like, I am not in the suburbs anymore. That was a different experience for me. I'm not a hunter. I know that may be stunning to some of you. I really couldn't tell you how to successfully get a deer, the intricacies, all the plans, all that kind of thing. But even when you know everything, right, it's a little bit up to chance. You've got to trust that the deer will cooperate by placing itself in the line of fire. Because sometimes people go out and they'll say, all weekend, I never even saw a deer. I never even got a good shot. There are a lot of variables there. And it really comes down to whether, not only if the deer are there, but whether you're good enough to kind of be downwind so they don't smell you and to gauge the angle and the wind and whatever. That's the extent of my knowledge. I won't say any more than that because I'll sound dumb. But as I was thinking about all that and I was kind of processing those thoughts, I realized that there are really a lot of simple but profound spiritual principles related to what people do when they hunt for a deer. You can find spiritual principles in pretty much anything, right? If you really ask the Lord to show that. And as I thought through this and as I started to study this text, I thought, you know, when we model these actions in our lives that we're going to present this morning, and as we trust the Lord and as we walk by the Spirit, the great thing about the Lord is there are no variables. There are no uncertainties. If we do what we're talking about this morning, the Lord will bless it. It's promised, it's certain, it's not like, well, if this happens, then that might change or whatever. No, if we do what we're going to study, then the Lord will bless it. Now, let me give you a little bit of a warning. Some of the things we're going to talk about this morning may seem a little bit basic or obvious, but as always, we come back to the question, are we actually doing them? So you've heard some of these things before, maybe you've heard all these things before, but it's not just enough to have an awareness of them. There has to be fruit, right? There has to be something that comes out of that knowledge and that awareness and out of our love and gratitude for the Lord. So this morning, and I want to encourage you to take some notes today. There's a place in the bulletin or you have paper or you can put in the note thing in your phone or whatever it is. But we're going to analyze five characteristics of the pursuit that our friends are on. And we're going to draw some spiritual parallels that I believe are really important. And we're just going to focus on one verse this morning. It's 2 Timothy chapter 2. 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 22. Paul writes to Timothy by the Spirit. The Spirit's leading Paul to write this. Now flee from youthful lusts and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. Now, before we dive into this background, and many of you already know this, but let's just give a little bit of context to what we're studying this morning, a little background about Timothy. We know from previous studies that apparently between the first letter that Paul writes to Timothy and this second letter, there was something that happened in Timothy's life. He was a young pastor who was ministering in the city of Ephesus, which was a challenging city because it was very diverse culturally, but it also was the center place for the worship of false gods. So Timothy is there in Ephesus, and he's serving, and he gets to the place where not the problems in the city, not the issues of dealing with a culture that was contrary to Christianity, that's not the problem that Timothy's facing in Ephesus. The problem he faced was internal in the church. He was being criticized as too young and not educated enough, and he wasn't Paul, and he wasn't doing his job, to the point that Timothy gets very weary. and very discouraged. And we infer from the text that at some point he wrote to Paul between 1st and 2nd Timothy and said, I'm done. I'm finished. I'm tired. I can't stand anymore. I'm being criticized left and right. I just don't think I can be effective anymore. So I need to stop. You need to pull me out. I need to not be in Ephesus anymore. So if you look back at chapter 1 for a minute, Paul writes to him, and this is between verses 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, all the way down. He writes to Timothy and he says, you need to do some things. And he gives him a bit of a list. You need to stoke the fire in your faith again. You need to refresh that fire, rekindle that fire that's kind of dying out. You're down to embers, Timothy. You got to do some things to get that going again. Then you got to remember your calling and the faith of your mom, your grandmother, and you need to not give up. It's too easy to just walk away at this point. You need to not give up. In fact, I want you to become more fervent about righteousness, more fervent about convictions, more fervent about your ministry, and I want you to be disciplined in the Lord and remember your calling. You know, for pastors, a lot of times we get to a place, and I've been this place many times in my ministry, where you're just like, I just can't do this anymore. I am so finished. And you know, the only thing that keeps you going is your calling. Knowing that God at some point, for me it was March of 1984, God at some point says, I don't want you to do anything else but serve me full time. And there have been many times where that's all I could come back to. I'm called. I can't walk away. Paul says that to Timothy. Remember your calling. This is not just a job. This is not just some niche thing that you're doing because it seems fun and because you've hung out with me. This is your calling. Now, that context is important because when we get to chapter 2, verse 22, Paul is talking in that whole section prior to this about faithfully enduring in this constant spiritual battle that we're facing not only as believers, but then as servants of the Lord. There's no latitude for being passive. No latitude for being lazy. No latitude for being apathetic. He says you have to keep going. And he says, if you look at verse 21, the verse just before this one, he says to him, we're called to live as sanctified, useful vessels to the Lord, prepared for every good work. Is that how you see your life today? I'm to be sanctified, useful, vessel for the Lord, prepared for anything, prepared for any opposition, any opportunity. I'm to be ready. Paul says, that's the preparation. Now we get to verse 22. How do we do that? And he says, it's by running from something and running to something. Now, I love words, and I love studying words in the text, and I don't mean to geek out on you with this, but as I was studying this, the Lord said, look at the verbs, all right? Many times you're studying the Bible, you'll hear the Holy Spirit say, look at the verbs, or look at the words. And I thought, why does Paul use a different word for fleeing lust and pursuing righteousness? There has to be something there, right? Right, class? There has to be something there. So, let's have some fun with the words. Flee. Flee is the Greek word phugo. Everybody say phugo. Sounds like a Japanese car or something, right? I got a phugo. It's really nice. It's energy efficient. It's a hybrid. No, phugo is a Greek word, and it means to escape safely from danger. Phugo, flee youthful lusts. Escape safely from danger. So this is a defensive action. It's a protective action against being harmed. That's phugo, flee youthful lusts. Then he says, pursue righteousness. That's a different word. That's the Greek word, dioko. Come on. Good. All right, so we got phugo and we've got dioko. You're like, who cares? It's Thanksgiving week. Why are you telling me these Greek words? Because pursue means to run swiftly and eagerly toward the goal. You get the difference? This is a positive, offensive action to attain something that is important. So he says, on one hand, flee, phugo, flee youthful lust, because it's dangerous. You need to get away from it. You need to protect yourself against it. And then in the opposite, dioko, you need to run after the goal of becoming righteous, because God's got something for you that's so much better than fugo. Paul says you got to do both. You got to do both. Now, we're going to focus this morning on the second one, dioko. I would hope by now that we all know to flee from sin. But it's absolutely essential that we're pursuing righteousness and faith. Now, Paul also talks about love and peace. I think those two words apply more to what was going on with Timothy internally in the church and being able to have forgiveness and grace toward other people. So we're not going to deal with those two. We're just going to deal this morning on the pursuit of righteousness and faith. Maybe you're tired this morning. Maybe you're emotionally, physically, spiritually just weary from fighting the battle like Timothy was. You're just, as Jamie said earlier, you're kind of downcast. You're just kind of, I don't know. I'm struggling. Or maybe you're not strong. You're not confident in your relationship with the Lord this morning, either because you're really not living a sanctified life or because you've drifted lately. If you're honest, you've looked at it and you kind of say, I'm not walking with the Lord the way I should. Whatever the case, how many know that pursuing holiness and deep faith is essential? That's what we have to do as believers. And if the dedication of our friends who are hunting this morning is an example, we see how to do that well. Okay, so there are going to be five characteristics. Write these down. Live with those a little bit this week. The first characteristic is that the pursuit is a priority. The pursuit is a priority. Our friends who were out there in the woods this weekend planned months ago. Months ago, they circled this on their calendar. They planned to be gone as soon as the state said you can start shooting deer on that day. They always know it's going to be about, what is this, the third weekend of November? So that's planned ahead. They're already thinking about 2024. What's the third weekend? The weekend before Thanksgiving. So they've planned on this. Now, as a pastor, I've had to adjust to this concept a little bit, because in other states, this is not as widespread. I once was interviewing in a church in Kansas City. They have a different issue. I was there at a 9:30 service, and in the middle of the service, half the crowd got up and walked out. Like, what is going on? I said to the person I was interviewing with, I said, where is everybody going? They said, they're going to the Chiefs game. Every place has something that they're passionate about. Well, in Wisconsin, there's a lot of passion about hunting deer. So we had to plan ahead, and I don't say this in any way critically or anything like that. We just had to think about it, because our worship director and our head of security and one of our staff members and elders is gone this weekend. And they're all faithful to the Lord. I'm not frustrated by that. We have less kids in the children's department today because of hunting season. Now, again, I'm not complaining. I'm just highlighting that this is something that is a priority. And as a priority, it visibly affects their actions and their thinking and their planning. Now, let's apply it spiritually. How similar and obvious are our priorities in terms of being part of this community of believers, in terms of growing and serving and connecting and giving and discipling? Do we intentionally plan, and hear my heart, I'm not picking this morning, but do we intentionally plan to be here multiple times a week, using the resources that the church provides to grow in our faith? There's so many opportunities, right? There's Sunday morning, you can connect, your kids can be here. There's Tuesday night young adults, there's Wednesday kids and youth and adult having great discussion, there's Thursday afternoon Bible study for women, there's Thursday night prayer meeting, there's Harbor Cafe, there's events, there's even projects like the guys who took down the trees yesterday. I want to thank Carl and his team for doing that. That was a big project, but there are ways to serve, and there are ways to connect. And Hebrews 10:25 warns us, don't abandon those. Don't forsake those opportunities to be together. But listen, this is just much more than attendance and being present. This is a matter of the heart. It begins with the priority we're placing on our personal time with the Lord. How intentional we're being with with our spiritual growth. Is daily time in the Word your priority? Is constant communication with the Lord throughout the day a priority? Is it a non-negotiable, or is it something we try to fit into the schedule and we go 3 or 4 days, oh yeah, I really haven't read, and I've got the reading plan, and I need to do that. What's the priority? I thought about a question last night, and it may sound really trite, forgive me, but which one's easier? A day without any time with your cell phone or a day without any time with the Lord? Which one would be easier to accomplish? You say, well, you know, I've got calls and stuff. Listen, I understand that. We do a fast every year in January. This year will be 24 days. And a lot of people use that as a time to take a break from tech, at least at night, because they need their phones during the day. But they'll take a break from tech. And I want to encourage you, try this out. Take a break from tech for a day. And just getting rid of your cell phone doesn't mean, well, I'll just do it on my computer. No, I mean a real break from tech. See how much extra time there is then to spend with the Lord. Because we get so involved with the priority of constantly being online. But which, look back at the verse, which will be more effective in helping us to flee youthful lust and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace? That doesn't mean you can't have a cell phone. That can exist, right? That can be a helpful tool even for growth. But we have to make sure that we're serious about getting the old out of our life. Because if you're a believer more than a year, the old shouldn't be an issue anymore. The old shouldn't still be around. And if we're not having victory, it either means we're hanging out with the wrong people or the wrong influences, or we're choosing to do what causes the Spirit a lot of grief. When He looks at your life, when He looks at my life, does He see Himself as our foremost priority? Does everything else pale in comparison to our love for the Lord? Does He see it in our scheduling, in our giving, in our time? Okay? So the first part of the pursuit is that it's a priority. The second part of the pursuit is that it requires preparation. We know hunters are a little fanatical, right? You can't just go out in the middle of a field wearing a bright red shirt and jeans, holding a bag of potato chips, crumpling it, right? And then say, all right, deer, I'm here to shoot you. Everybody come out. Crinkle, 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 wearing red. No hunter in his right mind would do that, because that would show a lack of preparation. They go earlier in the year and they get their tree stand ready. They make sure it's not visible. They make sure it has a good line of sight, a good angle where the deer might be. And then they find a place that will allow them to sit for hours in the cold. And they pack warm clothes and they pack gloves and they pack food that's quiet to eat. And they prepare to deal with any predators they might encounter. And more importantly, they make sure that their gun's ready, or that the bow and arrow is ready, that they have plenty of ammo, that they're ready to be there. Everything they do requires planning and thoughtfulness, because if they don't prepare themselves, the pursuit will be fruitless. It will be completely useless and pointless to be out there. They might as well stay home on their couch like I'm going to do. And I hope we're already seeing the spiritual parallels there, because we need to ask ourselves the question, how do I prepare myself to walk with the Lord? How do I prepare myself to serve the Lord effectively? And there are a couple questions there you can see on the screen. How resilient is my faith? Even when it's tested, even when it's stretched. You remember, we're old enough to remember that toy Stretch Armstrong, right? How many remember Stretch Armstrong? People under 20 are like, what in the world is a Stretch Armstrong? It was this weird little rubber toy that we had, this little guy, and you would pull his arms up. That was the whole thing, all right? That we had very simple toys back in the 70s. We were very bored all the time, right? So you got Stretch, you just pull them out, right? Okay, guys, back. Pull them out, go back. Oh, that was fun. What should we do now? Let's watch Gilligan's Island, right? Just Stretch Armstrong. But how resilient is our faith? When we're stretched, when we're tested, Are we resilient? What effective tactics do we have to withstand temptation, mentally and physically? What do we do when temptation comes? Do we succumb to it or do we fight it? How prepared are you to talk to somebody, to debate somebody, to defend your faith when somebody attacks your convictions or said Jesus isn't real or you Christians are way too strict and extreme and the Bible can't possibly... How do we answer those questions? The way we answer those gives insight into whether we're proactive or reactive. As a believer, are you proactive or are you reactive? Now, let me illustrate this a little bit by owning up to my own failure. Everybody want to hear a failure story for Paul Rhodes? Yeah, you were a little eager for that. Okay. This summer, Jake and Annie said, you know what? Why don't we all together run the turkey trot on Thanksgiving morning? It's a 5K down by the lake. And it was a family event, and I was really excited, and I was motivated to get ready for it. Annie and I kind of ran and walked it a couple years ago. And this year I wanted to run the whole thing because in college, believe it or not, I used to run about 5 miles a day and I really miss it. But I'm older and a little bit out of shape now. I can't wear the suit that Mike wore this morning because he's so thin and I'm not. So that would be funny. But I'm like, all right, I'm going to do this. I'm gonna print out the Couch to 5K plan. Couch to 5K. They say in about 6 to 8 weeks, you can go from sitting on your couch eating those potato chips I talked about earlier to running a 5K. And this is in summer, so I had months, right? I had more than 2 months. I got months to prepare for this. And I did a few of the sessions, but too often I was saying, well, I'll catch up tomorrow. How often do we take the same approach spiritually? Well, I didn't get to the Lord today. I didn't get to my Bible reading today. I didn't spend any time in prayer today. So you know what? I'll catch up tomorrow. But then another day slips by without any spiritual strengthening, and atrophy starts to kick in. We're called to discipline ourselves for the purpose of what? Tell me. Oh, we don't know that verse, so then we need to learn that verse. Discipline yourself for the purpose of godliness. Our discipline is to be godly, to make ourselves more like Christ. Now, I can give you a lot of reasons and a lot of excuses why I did not stay with the plan. I've been really busy. I've been working a lot of late nights. There's a lot of new responsibilities with the church merging. I'm tired. The weather was bad some days. And to be honest, many days I just didn't want to. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to go run. I didn't want to go train. But listen, no excuse was okay. The fact is, and this is where I confess to you as a church, I didn't discipline myself for it. Now on Thursday, I'll go out there because we've already paid, and I'll walk most of it. I won't run with my kids, and I'm disappointed in myself. I'm embarrassed. I didn't keep my word. Good intentions mean nothing, right? Somebody once said the path to hell is paved with good intentions. That might be a little strong, but we get the point. Without accountability to my kids, without having already put down money to run on Thursday or maybe walk on Thursday, I wouldn't show up. It's going to be about 35 degrees. We've got a lot of preparation to do. We've got some family coming in. I mean, there's things to do. But now that there's some accountability, we're going to be out there doing it. And that's an important aspect of the pursuit because it leads to the third characteristic. The pursuit needs a partnership. The pursuit needs a partnership. Anybody can go hunt alone, but there are a lot of benefits to doing it with other people. You can team up to lure the deer out. You can congratulate somebody when they're successful. You can commiserate with them when they're not successful. And you probably need some help getting that deer to the truck after you've killed it, because deer are big and heavy. Now, if you're taking your kids, as many do, and you want to teach them and train them how to do this, then you're partnering with them. There are spiritual parallels to this. We can team up together. Part of the strength of this room is we can team up together to withstand the enemy. We can rejoice together at this table. We can praise the Lord together. That encourages us. We can encourage and strengthen each other in our faith. If you see somebody that's downcast this morning, you see somebody that's kind of struggling, you say, you go beyond, how you doing? And or they say, I'm really struggling. Well, I'll be praying for you. I'm going to get out of here because I don't have to pray for them. No, you just say, I'm going to pray for you right now. You'll never see the countenance on a person's face change more when they're struggling. They say, let me pray for you right now. They'll go, really? Really? Pray for me right now? And when you get done praying, I guarantee you they're different. We can encourage and strengthen each other. We can give support to each other when somebody's struggling. We're co-laborers in ministry, and we have this awesome calling to set the example for our kids, to show them what it means to worship in spirit and truth, to show them what it means to give in the offering and to sacrifice, to show them what it means to serve, to teach and train them how to live for the Lord. Throughout the years, I've seen so many people go solo spiritually and fail miserably. Even though they've had people come alongside them, say, let me help you. Let me give you accountability. Let me pray for you. Let me meet with you for lunch. Let me try to help you. And they're like, no, I'm good. I'll do it. And you know what? They almost always fail. I've said for years that when I see somebody disappear from church for 4 or 5 weeks, I will lay money that they're struggling spiritually. Why? Because when you're spiritually strong, you want to be with the body. You want to gain the strength of this body. This room is strength this morning. You know, we merged 6 months ago on Tuesday. And for both congregations, how much better is this? How much better is this? I mean, this is awesome. We have more people to connect with. We have more people to grow together with. We have more people to encourage each other, to worship and pray and serve with. This has great value. And I don't know about you, but for me, it just gave me a fresh sense of calling. It gave me new wind under my sails for ministry and for outreach and discipleship. And I wasn't exactly strong, but the Lord said, no, I have more for you. You're going to be stronger now because there are more of you to work together. There's a partnership. And praise the Lord for how he's worked on that. And then that leads to the fourth characteristic. You still taking notes? The fourth characteristic of the pursuit is it gives us a renewed sense of purpose. Our friends who are out hunting this weekend aren't just trying to kill Bambi. And you know I had to get that joke in, right? They're not, oh, let's just shoot Bambi. There's a deer, kill it. That's not the point. Some people hunt for sport. But many people that are going out this weekend are hunting for food. A lot of people use that deer meat throughout the season to feed their family. It's far less expensive than buying boneless, skinless chicken at Pick 'n Save, right? I don't like venison. I don't like dark meat. I don't enjoy the taste. It's, as they say, gamey. But some people will be making venison stew all winter. I'll be making chicken parm, but it'll be more expensive for me. To each his own, right? But it's important for them. This isn't... This is not just we're going to take a weekend off and kill. This is a sense of purpose and necessity. Now, we know as believers that faithfully walking with the Lord has a purpose. We've already kind of described it in the first couple points. But as individual believers, we're called to grow in grace and the knowledge of the Lord Jesus Christ. We're supposed to be strong in our faith. We're supposed to bring glory to God by how we live. We're supposed to work out our salvation with fear and trembling and to reach people for Christ and to disciple people. That's the individual job of a believer. But the church also has a purpose. And I want to focus for just a couple minutes on this church's purpose. Why has God brought us together as Harbor Rock Tabernacle in the last year? That was no accident. That was not a result of our grand plans and strategies and our wisdom on we could be stronger as merging. A lot of us were taken off guard by this. And as we continue to pray, Lord, if you don't want this, close the door. And the Lord kept slamming the doors open because he was orchestrating this. And that hit me again yesterday as I read about the fresh plans for the mall. You probably saw this, right? They're going to put a Woodman's at the mall. I know, right? My grocery bill's going down. They're also going to put 279 new apartments. They're going to put in 5 new restaurants. How many are glad for new restaurants in Racine, right? We need some restaurants. That's in addition to the hundreds of apartments that are built about 2 miles away. And another mile after that, there are going to be hundreds more apartments. The growth, as we anticipated, is starting to move north from Illinois. It's already hit Kenosha. And guess where it's coming next? It's coming here. And we're the closest evangelical church to all of that. Now, let me take you back to 2010, because a lot of you may not know this story. Back in 2010, when we started the church, 13 years ago next Sunday, my desire, my heart, I felt this was a leading from the Lord, was to be between Racine and Kenosha. Because there are really, after the mall, there are no evangelical churches until you get to Kenosha. And I really believe that the Lord was calling Harbor Rock down to this part of town. And we looked at more buildings than I can count. I can pretty much take you around town and show you every building we've looked at. Just within here, I looked at 8 different buildings within a mile of here. We really believed that the Lord was calling us there. You remember the property? You know where Pick and Save is now? I'm getting a little local here. You know where Pick and Save is now down by the mall? Do you remember what that used to look like? It was the Mount Pleasant Town Hall. It sat up on a hill, and it was just prairie behind it. I prayed to the Lord, Lord, would you give us that property? That's a strategic corner. There's no way we could have developed that property. We didn't have the money. We didn't have the people. We didn't have the resources to be able to do that. So the Lord took us through 6 different buildings until we got to 4 Mile. And 4 Mile, to me, was the wrong location. But then I realized that the Lord had placed us at 4 Mile because there were not a lot of evangelical churches up there either. And that most of the base of our congregation lived on the north side of town. So I said, all right, Lord, that's where you want us. Then last fall happened. And we got the phone call from Fellowship. And the fact that it was this church in this location was not lost on me for a second. Because this is the last evangelical church between here and Kenosha. We couldn't have done that in our plans. Our plans didn't allow for that. We probably couldn't even have done that 13 years ago because we weren't strong enough as a church. We couldn't have done it 13 years ago because you weren't ready for that. But how many know that the Lord knew? How many know that the Lord's ways are so much better than our ways? And that so often the Lord gives us the desires of our heart, especially when they're pure and bring Him glory. So it's completely logical and reasonable that He calls us to be zealous for good works because His way is right. And it's so much easier to live by when we know His purpose for us. So here's the question. Do you know His purpose and assignment for you as a believer? Do you know what He's called you to, both in general and what's unique to you? What's based on your spiritual gifts? How are you serving in areas that complement you? In the new year, I'm praying that we're going to have a membership class and maybe even a series on calling that will talk about this and identify this. How are you feeding yourself? Are you hungering and thirsting after righteousness? And do we have a fresh sense of our assignment as a church? It's not just to have nice meetings and get to know each other and do our thing. It is to be very intentional, because God has placed us here to reach this area for Christ using the resources He's given to us. And if you're not on board with that yet, I'm going to pray for you that you'll get on board, because I want to be excited about that. There's a new calling that God has given to us, and we need to work together to accomplish that purpose. And then as we do that, that's important, because the final characteristic of the pursuit is it's motivated by passion. It's motivated by passion. When I woke up this morning, I wanted to stay in my comfortable bed. It was so warm, and I was so happy. When the alarm went off, I'm like, no. Do you know that our friends were already out there in trees at 4 a.m. in the cold, waiting hours to see a deer?
4 a.m. in the cold, sitting still in the dark, waiting to see your deer. Why would you do that unless you love it? Why would you do that unless you love it? Now, for me, I'll be honest, and I'm sure you've already seen this, that seems a little extreme. I don't love mornings to start with. I don't really enjoy being cold. I don't like sitting still for hours, and I don't really care about shooting a deer. I'd probably be a little bored. I'm probably not the person you want to take hunting. But you know what? Some people live for this weekend because they love it. So let me ask a question that you've heard before, but I want us to really evaluate the true answer. How much do you love the Lord? How much do you love the Lord? Take a minute. Don't glide over it. Sit with that question. Weigh the depth and importance of the question, especially as you look at this table in front of us. How much do you love the Lord? We are called, we're even commanded, love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength. So is that actually true? Is he just a casual acquaintance? Is he just a good friend? Is he just a resource to you? Or is he everything? Is he everything to you? How effectively to communicate that through your actions and your words? Who are you teaching and influencing to love him more because you love him so much? There's a lot of discussion these days over what the word discipleship means. What does it mean to disciple somebody? And I think the Apostle Paul explained it perfectly in 1 Corinthians 11:1. He says, imitate me as I imitate Christ. Imitate me as I imitate Christ. Now, some people say, well, Paul's being very arrogant. That's very self-centered to say, hey, look at me, look at me, look at me. No, Paul's saying this is what it takes to make disciples, to teach and set an example for someone to look like you because you look so much like Christ. I've never seen Jesus Christ personally. I've never seen him tangibly. So how do I know what it is to be like Christ? Well, I study his word, I listen to his spirit, and then I look at examples. And when you see that person that's so faithful, walking with the Lord, living, eating, and breathing Jesus Christ, that it's everything to them, you go, that's what I want to look like. We should all be able to look at each other and say, that's how Jesus talked. That's how Jesus thought. That's how Jesus ministered. That's how Jesus lived. Just look at their life. It's a living embodiment of that. That person is so close to the Lord that I can follow their example, and they can look at me the same way. Want to be a church of discipleship? Let's start there. It's not a program. We can throw out discipleship programs and Bible studies and all kinds of that stuff, and that stuff's important. But listen, you know the best way to be a church of discipleship is to live it. So when somebody walks in, they go, this place is really different. What is going on there? I've never been around a group of people that loves the Lord so much, that is so invested in serving and ministering and loving and caring for people and doing outreach. Do people see that passion and zeal in us? Do they see the priority and the preparation and the purpose? Do they see us working together, living for the Lord individually and together? Do they see us pursuing righteousness? These aren't small questions. They're the essence of what it means to live for Jesus Christ. So how you doing? Which of those five is an area that needs some full-time pursuit?